Good morning. So when I got asked to take the Bible study, I asked for suggestions as to what I should be looking at, and I guess this was the one suggestion and I decided to go for it. What does the Bible say about anger? Anger is an emotion that tells us when something may be wrong. For example, we may feel angry when something is beyond our control or feels unfair, when we can't reach a goal, or when someone is hurt or threatened. We can also feel angry when we are under too much stress. Anger can involve a wide range of feelings: jealousy, envy, hatred, unforgiveness, etc. Anger can shatter communication and tear apart relationships and ruins the joy and health of many. But anger is not always sin. There is a type of anger that the Bible approves of called righteous indignation. Two Greek words used in the New Testament are translated as anger. One means passion or energy, and the other agitated or boiling. Anger becomes sinful when it is motivated by pride, when we feel our reputations, interests, images, etc. are at stake. Often the consequences of unrestrained anger are irreparable damage to relationships, pain to the ones we love, and regret. If we allow ourselves to be overtaken by a full rage, we are no longer capable of thinking clearly or making rational decisions. Proverbs 29:11 says, "A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man restrains it." James 1:19-20 says, "Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God." So just for some interaction here, what are things that might cause us to feel angry? Abe's bringing the mic here.
Hitting your finger.
That's a good one. Any others?
Maybe you referred to it a little bit, but selfishness, if we're very self-centered, then obviously things can go different than what I think or whatever, and that could cause us to act that way.
I think that's a big one.
There's brothers mentioned in Genesis, and it's they killed someone, and I just noticed that it said in their self-will. I think that's a cause.
Yeah.
Usually when I perceive the incompetence or the blindness of people, it makes me angry. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Thank you. I have written down here, injustice done to us or other people, feeling challenged about our position on different things, feeling hurt about things said about us or done to us, and when things or situations are taken out of our control. So I think we do well to try to keep our anger under control. Ephesians 4:26-27 says, 26 and 27 says, "Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil." So it almost seems, according to Paul, that anger is a God-given emotion, but needs to be dealt with very carefully. It appears like the feeling of anger is not so wrong, but how it manifests itself is what makes it sinful. We can respond explosively and put in no effort to hide it, or we can hide it well and just seethe inwardly, which tends to be my way of dealing with it. But neither of these reactions works the righteousness of God. The Bible says God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. I don't think we can really be angry without in part also being dealing with pride. Right? I think if we have lots of pride, we'll tend to be angry sooner as well. Anger, like any other temptation, must be overcome with God's help. Going back to Ephesians 4 there, where it says, "Be angry and sin not." Would anybody like to elaborate on what that exactly might mean? But it almost appears there like there's a concession made for being angry, but it says we're not to sin in our anger. And I'm just trying to figure out exactly what that would mean.
Just recently, I was at a place where there was discussion on this verse, and it almost seems as if maybe the King James Version might be the only one that would leave that concession.
The ESV says it the same way, be angry and sin not. So, just curious to know what that might mean. Wayne again here.
I guess I said that wrong. I said that it'd be the only version that would leave that concession. The New Living Translation says, and don't sin by letting your anger control you. And I think in the context that it was talked about, it was a Spanish-speaking preacher that had mentioned that the Spanish Bible would say, don't be angry and don't sin.
Mark 3 verse 5 says, and it's talking about Jesus, when he had looked round about on them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their heart, he healed a man, and they were just looking to corner him on his not keeping the Sabbath, and he was healing someone. It says he looked around on them with anger because of the hardness of their heart. So I believe injustice like that and just the sin of their heart, they were totally unjust, and yet they were so religious and self-righteous. There's nothing wrong with that kind of anger.
No, I totally agree with that. Like, that's where I had the two different types. Like the righteous indignation, which would be like passion or energy. Like, I don't think we're supposed to be so passive and emotionless that we can't feel any sense of anger when there is actually an injustice done to other people. So then I'm going to ask for different examples in the Bible of righteous indignation or anger and foolish wrath or like the sinful type of anger. Is there any that come to your mind in any of those two categories? John?
Another version that says, in your anger, do not sin. And I'm wondering if that brings some clarification to that as well. That, you know, that, like you said before, the emotion of anger in and of itself is but it could lead to sin. You know, even if I'm angry over unrighteousness and wickedness, that could still lead me to sin. Mm-hmm. It should lead me to prayer and brokenness before God. But it has the ability to lead me to sin, even though the initial emotion may not have been a selfish thing. It was genuinely grieved over something that's wrong. But then I have to make sure that doesn't lead me into something that's wrong.
Yeah, I think it's anger, like any other emotion, is one of those things that we're faced with it, but what we do with it is what makes it either right or wrong. So I'm still looking for different examples of the two different types of anger.
First one I think of is Cain. It was only his own sinful heart that caused him to be angry.
Yeah, I had that one written down. Yeah, that's right. I'm pretty sure there was anger involved there too. Yeah, when Joseph's brothers threw him into the pit and then sold him to the Egyptians. Ron?
Well, those verses we're discussing here come after in Ephesians 4, verse 19, it says, "In past feeling you have given themselves over to lewdness to work all uncleanness with greediness, but you have not so learned Christ." In verse 24 it says, "That you may put on the new man which is created according to God in all true righteousness and holiness." And it would be my opinion that 25 and 26 are warnings to the believer that even righteous anger motivated by the flesh doesn't bring the fruits of righteousness. And, you know, even in judgment, we're not supposed to condemn people. That's God's work, not ours. Anger tends to do that. We write people off and we work against Christ and the cross when we do that. So that's why I think that you can see the outworkings of your passions leading you down a certain way. If you go into history, the Crusades were motivated by men who thought they knew God, religious men. And they went off and murdered many people. Looking back, we can now see that that wasn't the righteousness of God.
No.
And it's a big blotch in our in the history of man, right?
I still think there's a time when, let's say you see a real injustice happening to another person, where there's a place where you're not wrong if you actually feel a real sense of anger. I mean, still, whatever you do with it is what makes it right or wrong, but it's not like you have to condemn yourself if you feel angry about something that's happening to somebody else. Generally, if we get angry about something that happens to ourselves, that tends to be more of a selfish type of an anger. But if it's on behalf of somebody else, I'm not sure if that's, seems to me there can be a concession made where if we feel that passion of wanting to deal with the injustice, I don't think it's something we have to feel bad about. Mike?
I think typically anger comes first, and then retaliation comes second. And from what I understand, retaliation is always wrong,
exactly,
even if the cause was correct.
And I think if we can stop before we come to retaliation, we're probably okay. Lawrence?
Moses had a few examples of anger as well. Kind of righteous, but it doesn't. It looks like an example of righteous indignation that turned into sin.
Which one are you thinking of?
Well, there was a couple. First off, with the Egyptian that he killed.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, the Lord refused to let him go to Canaan, then for that time on the, I forget exactly what he did, but he got angry about something that was angry worthy, so to speak.
Yeah, it was in
idol worship and stuff going on.
But, okay, I was thinking of the one in Numbers. Numbers 20, when he was supposed to speak to the rock, and instead he struck it because he was just so fed up with. I'll read the account here. And Jehovah spake unto Moses, saying, "Take the rod, and assemble the congregation, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, that it give forth its water. And thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their cattle drink." And Moses took the rod from before Jehovah, as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, And he said unto them, Hear now, ye rebels, shall we bring ye forth water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and smote the rock with his rod twice, and water came forth abundantly, and the congregation drank and their cattle. And Jehovah said unto Moses and Aaron, Because ye believe not in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. In a sense, I think we can sympathize probably with Moses there because of him being angry. Like, God had proven himself faithful every time up until then, but still they didn't seem to be willing to trust him. So I think it just kind of boiled up inside of him, and he, instead of speaking, he struck the rock. The result was the same as if he would have spoken to it, but it had an everlasting consequence. The other one I had here was David's response to Nathan's parable there in 2 Samuel. And Jehovah sent Nathan unto David, and he came unto him and said unto him, There were two men in one city, the one rich and the other poor. The rich man had exceeding many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing, save one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished up and grew it up together with him and with his children. And it did eat of his own morsel and drank of his own cup and lay in his bosom and was unto him as a daughter. And there came a traveler unto the rich man, and he spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that was come unto him, but took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that was come to him. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man, and he said to Nathan, As Jehovah liveth, the man that hath done this is worthy to die, and he shall restore the lamb fourfold, because he did this thing, because he had no pity. And Nathan said to David, Thou art the man. Thus saith Jehovah, the God of Israel, I anointed thee king over Israel, and I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul. And I gave thee thy master's house and thy master's wives into thy bosom, and gave thee the house of Israel and Judah. And if that had been too little, I would have added unto thee such and such things. We all know David was in sin, but still how he responded, I think in a sense shows a sense of righteous indignation because of the injustice that was done. In 1 Kings 11, Nine and ten. And Jehovah was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from Jehovah, the God of Israel, who had appeared unto him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he kept not that which Jehovah commanded. I think we all know Solomon had been blessed more than basically any king before him, and yet he still, it seemed that all the riches that he had weren't enough, and God was angry with him, and I would say rightly so. If anybody wants to speak up any time, just speak up. Another interesting one is in 1 Samuel 20, where Jonathan had sent David away because he knew of his father's anger. Verse 24. So David hid himself in the field, and when the new moon was come, the king sat him down to eat food. And the king sat upon his seat, as at other times, even upon the seat by the wall. And Jonathan stood up, and Abner sat by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul spake not anything that day, for he thought, Surely something hath befallen him, he is not clean. Surely he is not clean. And it came to pass on the morrow after the new moon, which was the second day, that David's place was empty, and Saul said unto Jonathan his son, Wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meat, neither yesterday nor today? And Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, Let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city, and my brother he hath commanded me to be there. And now if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. Therefore he is not come unto the king's table. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said unto him, Thou son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own shame, and unto the shame of thy mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom. Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. And Jonathan answered Saul his father, and said unto him, Wherefore should he be put to death? What hath he done? And Saul cast his spear at him to smite him, whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to put David to death. So Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger, and did eat no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David, because his father had done him shame. In this account here, I think we see two different types of anger as well, with Saul's being, a real foolish anger, and Jonathan, I would say his anger was in a sense justified because of Saul's desired injustice towards David. Then also I've got, I think it was the one that Abe had made mention of in Mark. Mark 3. And he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there who had his hand withered, and they watched him, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him. And he saith unto the man that had his hand withered, Stand forth. And he saith unto them, Is it lawful on the Sabbath day to do good or to do harm, to save a life or to kill? But they held their peace. And when he had looked round about on them with anger, being grieved at the hardening of their heart, he saith unto the man, Stretch forth thy hand. And he stretched it forth, and his hand was restored. And the Pharisees went out, and straightway with the Herodians took counsel against him, how they might destroy him. And I would put that down again as a righteous indignation on Jesus' part because of the Pharisees and their attitude. Then also in Jonah. In Jonah, where that gourd had grown up, and then overnight it had withered. But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was angry, and he prayed unto Jehovah, and said, I pray thee, O Jehovah, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Therefore I hasted to flee unto Tarshish, for I knew that thou art a gracious God, merciful, slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness, and repentest thee of the evil. Therefore now, O Jehovah, take, I beseech thee, my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live. And Jehovah said, Dost thou well to be angry? Then Jehovah went out of the city and sat on the east side of the city, and there made him a booth and sat under it in the shade, till he might see what would become of the city. And Jehovah God prepared a gourd and made it come up over Jonah, that it might be a shade over his head to deliver him from his evil case. So Jonah was exceeding glad because of the gourd, but God prepared a worm. When the morning rose the next day, and it smote the gourd that it withered, and it came to pass, when the sun arose, that God prepared a sultry east wind, and the sun beat upon the head of Jonah, that he fainted, and requested for himself that he might die, and said, It is better for me to die than to live. And God said to Jonah, Dost thou well to be angry for the gourd? And he said, I do well to be angry, even unto death. And Jehovah said, Thou hast had regard for the gourd, for which thou hast not labored, neither mayest it grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. And should not I have regard for Nineveh, that great city, wherein are more than 60,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left hand, and also much cattle? There I'd say it just looks like an all-out pout on Jonah's part. There was nothing righteous about it whatsoever. And yet he, in a sense, he felt justified. And I'm guessing God was kind of frustrated with him as well, with his whole attitude. And there's many different verses too where it shows that God is slow to anger, and I think we do well to be the same. Nehemiah 9, verse 9 to 21. And thou sawest the affliction of our fathers in Egypt, and heardst their cry by the Red Sea, and showest signs and wonders upon Pharaoh and all his servants, and on all the people of his land. For thou knewest that they dealt proudly against them, and didst get thee a name, as it is this day. And thou didst divide the sea before them, so that they went through the midst of the sea on the dry land, and their pursuers thou didst cast into the depths, as a stone into the mighty waters. Moreover, in a pillar of cloud thou ledst them by day, and in a pillar of fire by night, to give them light in the way wherein they should go. Thou camest down also upon Mount Sinai, and spakest with them from heaven, and gavest them right ordinances and true laws, good statutes and commandments, and madest known unto them thy holy Sabbath, and commandest them commandments and statutes and a law by Moses thy servant. And gavest them bread from heaven for their hunger, and broughtest forth water for them out of the rock for their thirst, and commandest them that they should go in to possess the land which thou hast sworn to give them. But they and our fathers dealt proudly, and hardened their neck, and hearkened not to thy commandments, and refused to obey, neither were mindful of thy wonders that thou didst among them, but hardened their neck, and in their rebellion appointed a captain to return unto their bondage. But thou art a God, ready to pardon, gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness, and forsookest them not. Yea, when they had made them a molten calf, and said, This is thy God that brought thee up out of the Egypt, and had wrought great provocations, yet thou in thy manifold mercies forsookest them not in the wilderness. The pillar of cloud departed not from over them by day to lead them in the way, neither the pillar of fire by night to show them light and the way wherein they should go. Thou gavest also thy good spirit to instruct them, and withheldest not thy manna from their mouth, and gavest them water for their thirst. Yea, 40 years didst thou sustain them in the wilderness, and they lacked nothing. Their clothes waxed not old, and their feet swelled not. I kind of like that account there simply because it goes to show how God provided everything. The Israelites were ungrateful and unthankful. It didn't seem to really matter what God did for them. They were still ungrateful. And yet God, yeah, we know there was times when he was angry with them, but in the end, I think on human terms, his response would have been to just simply destroy every last one of them. But in his mercy and his kindness and his being slow to anger, he still preserved them in spite of everything. And I think we do well to try to have that same spirit with our fellow man. Psalms 103, 8-14. Jehovah is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness. He will not always chide, neither will he keep his anger forever. He hath not dealt with us after our sins, nor rewarded us for our iniquities. For as the heavens are high above the earth, so great is his loving kindness toward them that fear him. And as far as the east is from the west, so far hath he removed our transgressions from us. Like as a father pitieth his children, so Jehovah pitieth them that fear him. For he knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. Also in Joel 2:12-14. Yet even now, saith Jehovah, turn ye unto me with all your heart, and with fasting, and with weeping, and with mourning, and rend your heart, and not your garments. Turn unto Jehovah your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness, and repenteth him of the evil. Who knoweth whether he will not turn and repent and leave a blessing behind him, even a meal offering and a drink offering unto Jehovah our God. Nahum 1:2-8. Jehovah is a jealous God and avengeth. Jehovah avengeth and is full of wrath. Jehovah taketh vengeance on his adversaries and reserves wrath for his enemies. Jehovah is slow to anger and great in power, and will by no means clear the guilty. Jehovah hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. He rebuketh the sea and maketh it dry, and drieth up all the rivers. Bashan languisheth, and Carmel and the flower of Lebanon languisheth. The mountains quake at him, and the hills melt, and the earth is upheaved at his presence, yea, the world and all that dwell therein. Who can stand before his indignation, and who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? His wrath is poured out like fire, and the rocks are broken asunder by him. Jehovah is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that take refuge in him. But with an overrunning flood he will make a full end of her place, and will pursue his enemies into darkness. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 9. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Say not thou, what is the cause that the former days are better than those, for thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Psalms 37, verse 8. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself, it tendeth only to evil doing. Then, of course, Proverbs always has a lot of good words. Proverbs 12, 16. A fool's vexation is presently known, but a prudent man concealeth his shame. Proverbs 14, 17. He that is soon angry will deal foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated. And I think that's a good one there, because if we give ourselves over to anger quickly, we make unwise decisions, and it always brings regret. 14:29. He that is slow to anger is of great understanding, but he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly. Proverbs 15:1-4. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but a grievous word stirreth up anger. The tongue of the wise uttereth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out folly. The eyes of Jehovah are in every place, keeping watch upon the evil and the good. A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breaking of the spirit. Verse 18 of the same. A wrathful man stirreth up contention, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife. Do any of you have verses that you'd like to throw in here too? Clarence?
While we're in Proverbs here yet, there's a verse in chapter 20. Proverbs 20, verse 2, gives another angle to anger. It would give the thought there, the one that provoketh the person to anger also sinneth.
Yeah, I don't think we can intentionally provoke somebody into anger without being guilty. There's no right way of doing that, I don't think. Anybody else? Edward.
There's a verse here. There's been a lot shared, and I'm not sure if this verse was shared or not. I was trying to keep an ear open for it, but in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, where it says, "Be ye angry and sin not." And it says, "Let the sun not go down upon your wrath." If we keep reading a few verses down, it also says, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice." And when we're on the subject of anger, we recognize that it is something that we are called to put away from us.
Yeah. Thank you. Jake?
Here's a passage that I want to read here. I'm sure this man was not smiling when he did it. I just want to read it here. Mark chapter 11, verse, I think it starts 15, I think. And they come to Jerusalem, and Jesus went into the temple and began to cast out them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables and the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves, and would not suffer that any man should carry any vessel through the temple. And he taught them, saying, is it not written, my house shall be called of all nations the house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves.
Yeah, that's one I had considered putting down, but I know there's been times too when people were not all of the same opinion as to, like, some people think he was almost breathing fire, and others are more convinced he was just more of a grieved spirit. So I'm not sure how much difference there is there, but I tend to think too you could see I'm pretty sure there was sparks in his eyes when he did that.
If you go into John, it says, right after he did it, it says, the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Maybe we need to rename righteous indignation as zeal.
Mike?
You read a verse earlier, I don't remember where it was, about God being angry. And I would look at this the same, that we can't compare, we can't take our cues from how God or Jesus get angry, because we're not God. And it's their privilege to retaliate against any one of us at any time or against the whole world. And so if Jesus wants to get angry and, you know, drive the donkeys out of the temple and things, I don't think it was a burst of self. It was God's holiness and it was God's sovereignty that made him do that.
Yeah.
And we don't need to try to explain it away. That's what it was, yeah, in my opinion.
No, I tend to believe too he was angry for a reason.
So that has me asking a question. A few years back, I was meeting with somebody that was totally trapped in an evil lifestyle. And after he opened up and shared that with me, I drove away and I was feeling very intense anger. But it wasn't directed at him. I was angry because he was deceived in living that way for so long. Was there something wrong with that?
I think I know exactly what you're talking about, because there's been times too when I saw people in a certain type of bondage or a certain type of sin where it angered me, but there was, I don't know if that's right or if it's wrong, but it's definitely a feeling that I've experienced too.
Well, one thing we know is for sure, don't in that anger, don't sin. Don't let it lead you to sin. And don't go to bed that way.
Mike? Like, I'd say my anger wasn't directed at the person, but more at the spirit or things that I couldn't control.
I think we have to remember as well that we don't speak Greek, and I think we could be confused about a word. And we should say that we weren't angry at this situation, but we were burdened, and no one would bat an eye if we said that.
Yeah,
I think it's possibly we don't understand it quite the way it was originally presented.
Yeah, Alvin.
The reality is anger. One of the meanings you mentioned with anger is there's a passion that boils and burns or grows or is there. Say it how you want to. Even in Ephesians 4, it talks about we get passion. But then let's look at the example of God and how he deals with passion. He had passion toward Jonah. I noticed in that example, he had passion toward Jonah. It doesn't say that he was angry, I don't think, in the first chapter or two there. But all of a sudden, God was acting. And I'm desiring, and I see in my own life, when the passion comes, there's a place to wait and then to act properly on it. See, our passion can cause us to do selfish acts destructive acts, unwise acts, and we're supposed to get rid of those. Mm-hmm. But the passion, we don't want to get rid of passion. We want to walk with passion, but wisely. And Proverbs is filled with wisdom and how to then respond. Many times it's wait. Many times it's pray over it. Many times it's deal with it in some other way.
And I think we can, too, get things mixed up with thinking that any type of anger is so wrong that we can, in a sense, end up being totally passive, or we almost lack any emotion anymore. And I think we still need to have that feeling of, well, in a sense, righteous indignation when we see things and situations that are where sin prevails or whatever. Alvin? Abe? Alvin again.
Another interesting thing with this word, the same word is used in various places in other scriptures for wrath and indignation, even this word anger. And sometimes that just helps sort through all that. God has indignation. God has wrath coming. We don't want to be in the way of his wrath, which one day is going to be poured out. And that is some of the same words.
Ron.
Yeah, I'll just weigh in on my two cents. But there's different emotions. Like Abe talked about his experience there. Not everybody gets angry when they hear those things. Some people go home and cry their eyes out, you know. Abe says some do both. Some people have been in places where they just go dead emotionally. They just blank out and they feel nothing. But you'll search the scriptures a long time before I don't think you can see in the scriptures that we're supposed to act on our emotions of how we feel or don't feel. If we see someone in sin, we're supposed to go to prayer and to break the chains and do the things that God asks us to do to set people free, right? And how you feel is really a second. It's only actually a gauge for you to look at yourself, not really to measure how well we can go out and do God's work, right?
Yeah, and I agree with that. Like,
and I guess that'd be my... I agree, I'm not disagreeing with what you said. I'm just saying that would be my...
Like, what we do with our anger is what makes it right or wrong. Like, obviously, if we feel a sense of righteous indignation and we allow that to, like, take over and we start doing things on our own, that makes it sin. But if, like you said, if it makes us go into prayer and fight this thing in prayer rather than physically... I think it's doing a good thing.
Yeah, like I used to. Yeah, I that's fair. Yeah.
Is there anybody else? Proverbs 16, verse 32. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh his city. Proverbs 25, 28. He whose spirit is without restraint is like a city that is broken down and without walls. Proverbs 29:22-23. An angry man stirreth up strife, and a wrathful man aboundeth in transgression. A man's pride shall bring him low, but he that is of a lowly spirit shall obtain honor. Matthew 5:21-24. Ye have heard that it was said to them of old time, Thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. And whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of the hell fire. If therefore thou art offering thy gift at the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way, and first be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Agree with thine adversary quickly while thou art in the way with him, lest haply the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Romans 12:19-21. Avenge not yourselves, beloved, but give place unto the wrath of God. For it is written, Vengeance belongeth unto me, I will recompense, saith the Lord. But if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him to drink. For in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. First Corinthians 13:4-5. Love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself. Is not puffed up. Does not behave itself unseemly. Seeketh not its own. Is not provoked. Taketh not account of evil. Rejoiceth not in unrighteousness. But rejoiceth with the truth. Beareth all things. Believeth all things. Hopeth all things. Endureth all things. Galatians 5:19-26. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, sorcery, enmities, strife, jealousies, wraths, factions, divisions, parties, envyings, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of which I forewarn you, even as I did forewarn you, that they who practice such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, meekness, self-control. Against such there is no law. And they that are of Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with the passions and the lusts thereof. If we live by the Spirit let us also walk. Let us not become vainglorious, provoking one another, envying one another. So here it's quite clear that anger is definitely, it's a lust of the flesh, or it's not a fruit of the Spirit anyway. And we're called to be long-suffering and patient rather than allowing ourselves to be angry. Ephesians 4:29-32. Let no corrupt speech proceed out of your mouth, but such as is good for edifying, as the need may be, that it may give grace to them that hear. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, in whom ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, and wrath, and anger, and clamor, and railing, be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, even as God also in Christ forgave you. Colossians 3. Paul, an apostle. No, wait a second. If then ye were raised together with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is seated on the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things that are above, not on the things that are upon the earth. For ye died, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall be manifested, then shall ye also with him be manifested in glory. Put to death therefore your members, which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. For which things sake cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience, wherein ye also once walked when ye lived in these things. But now do ye also put them all away, anger, wrath, malice, railing, shameful speaking out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing that ye have put off the old man with his doings, and have put on the new man, that is being renewed unto the knowledge after the image of him that created him. And again, just quite clearly that anger is definitely not a fruit of the Spirit. Is there anything somebody else would like to share yet? Well, that's all I've got down for now. Thanks for your interaction.